This is the Toolbox on Spark. I'm your favourite folk devil, Rolly Joe Carney, and there is no Hamish with me this week. He is off on his jollies. He's in Prague having the time of his life. So it's just me. I'm going to have the Invisible Backpack check in, and then I'm going to talk to you a little bit about transitions and dealing with change. Let's get into it.
Saddle up your horses, cowboy. For the only men's issue show in all of radio. The Toolbox.
This is the Toolbox. I'm your favourite folk devil, Rolly Joe Carney. And as you've just heard, the rumours are true. There's no Hamish with me this week. He is away in Prague. And I'm not going to lie, didn't think it was fair to call on people again on a Sunday night. So it is just me. I'm going to be talking to you a bit about transitions, as in transitional periods in your life, adjusting to change, and also a little bit about grief. But before we get into any of that, before I get into any of that, it's time for the Invisible Backpack check-in. If you're not aware or you haven't listened to us before, the Invisible Backpack is what Hamish and I use to check in with each other. It's non-analytical, it's not clinical, but it's just to give a general sense of where we're at mentally. Everyone's got an invisible backpack. It can be really heavy or it can be really light. So it can be full of all the things that affect, well, it is full of all the things that affect your life. You know, your mental health, your physical health, you know, body image, self-esteem, anxiety. But it can also be the good things, you know, joy, having a laugh, happiness. You know, maybe things are going well at work. Maybe you're relationships going well, maybe your kids have done a performance that you're really, really proud of them for. It could be anything. So my backpack this week has been really, really good. I had a couple of days back in Liverpool because my mum turned a big 60, Big Jacks. Happy birthday, mum. I am obviously the best present that you ever got, and I am the gift that keeps on giving. To my partner down to meet a large part of my family, and that all went really well, so don't have any complaints about that. But if you were listening last week, you will have heard me tell you that a friend of mine passed away. Still don't know anything more about it, and I thought it was all right. I thought that you know, I was handling it well. And then I finished work last night and met up with a couple of friends sitting there. We've sat at the bar up in the ship Isis. And just for that moment to sit down and this moment of calm with me pint, I just sort of went into myself a little bit. And that's not like me at all. I haven't been that way ever. Like, if I'm ever not talking, that's when you know there's a problem. And it's just unusual, and I got to thinking about Kate, and I got to thinking about all the good times we had together, all the bad times we had together, and trying to wrap my head around why she could never get herself straight and sorted, why she could never, you know, conquer her demons. And I know it's different for everyone, and I know that it's not an easy thing to talk. Like, and I'll unpack this more when I talk about grief a little bit later on. But that part of me that accepted years ago that this could have been the outcome when she was fighting her alcohol addiction, and with all that trigger warning, I'll be talking about suicide probably in this show, and suicide attempts. You kind of reckon with yourself deep down, and there's a level of acceptance that, okay, this might happen or whatever. And then when it does happen, it's a shock, but it's not a surprise. I'll talk a little bit later about a different one, about a different friend who passed last year. Honestly, the last 3 years, I've lost a friend a year. It's not great. And, you know, I miss her and I carry her with me, and it sucks. And because of the circumstances around the death, whether or not it was due to alcohol-related reasons or whether it was, you know, a surprise health concern, or whether it was a, you know, successful suicide, you just don't, there's no information coming out. And I think that's what's making it worse. If we knew what happened, and if the friends, the wider friend group knew what happened, then you'd be more able to sit in those feelings and go, yeah, I can, you know, I can get that. You know, it's a health thing happening out of nowhere. You know, how often do you hear about that happening? It happens all the time. If it is to do with booze, then it's just something where you've got to just, you can't process. And it's just, you know, my thoughts and my love are, you know, with Daniel, Kate's boyfriend, and with her family and her other friends. Because I'm not the only person who'll be sitting here feeling like this. Like, despite it all, Kate was a wonderful, beautiful, warm person. She had a sense of humour, and yeah, she was an addict, which also meant that she was a nightmare at times, chaotic and erratic and irrational. But within some of that, it's, you know, that's some of the funniest experiences in my life. I remember she was in a hospital on a secure unit. She'd been put in for a mental health and the aforementioned suicide attempts and self-harm, and also, you know, the alcoholism. And she only ever used to ask me to bring her magazines and biscuits and a bottle of Lucozade, you know, one of the big bottles, the beta ones. So I would take them in for her, and we sat in the, you know, I guess, visiting room. And we sat there, and there was this, like, really, really hefty girl who we... it's not BC, but we just referred to her as the fat lass. You know, she had her hair pulled back tight, a proper Chelsea facelift. And she always wore these, like, blue pyjamas that looked like hospital scrubs. It was a really strong look. She always had a full face of makeup on, heavily caked on. And the same time that I was in visiting Kate, there was a, you know, biker from... and I don't want to name the motorcycle club, because there's one here in Sunderland, and I don't want to get beaten up for bad talk, but, you know, potentially given a bad story about a 1% motorcycle club, so I won't name the MC it was. And we just sat there, and, like, this big girl sat opposite this biker, proper what you imagine a biker to be as well. He's got the, you know, the colours on, and he's got the long hair, looking dead greasy, dead rough, and it's, yeah, whatever. And the hands are reaching across the table, and then we just see her move round, and her hands slip under the table, and we're just transfixed whilst something's happening below the table, and we're just like, we can't be seeing this. Like, this can't be real. And, like, staff are walking past, And you're there like that, just like, what is going on here? Like, I put in a complaint after that, being like, yeah, and they just basically turned around and went, like, what are we going to do against the biker? And you're just like, I get it, like, whatever, but you don't want to be seeing that when you're, when you're trying to cheer your mate up. Yeah, whilst the big lass was cheering up the biker, like, just there like that, but... It's those stories that come back, as much as, you know, times where I've had to kick a door in to get her to hospital because she's taken too much paracetamol and washed it down with a bottle of vodka. You know, when it balances out, and it's I think part of it is how you choose to remember someone. I'll talk about this in more depth in talk about this in more depth when I talk about grief and transition, because I think one of those transitions is the part of your life where you start to have dead friends. And it's a different age for everyone, and maybe I was lucky that I got to, you know, my late 20s, early 30s before it started to happen. And, you know, I'm at a level, I'm at a place now where I'm mature enough to level that shock and, you know, process it in a healthier way. But, you know, rest in peace, Kate. Like, honestly, rest in peace, Queen. I genuinely, genuinely hope she's at peace. It's all I want, because she was so tormented with her demons for so many years. And, you know, I understand there's a lot of people out there, maybe you're one of them, who, you know, maybe you have empathy, maybe you have a little bit of compassion, but, you know, you're not sorry, you don't have any sympathy for people who get addicted to things or struggle. And, you know, I'm not going to sit here and be like, oh, how can you be like that? Like, I get it. You know, life's hard and people deal with different things in different ways. Not everyone turns to the bottle. Not everyone, you know, goes out and gets hooked up on drugs or whatever. Like, but the main thing that we want from the Invisible Backpack is to preach a bit of empathy and compassion. Because maybe you'll need it one day and people will judge you just as you're judging somebody else. I don't know. It's hard, but this is one of Kate's favourite songs. It's Electric Feel by The Management. Untamed by Sunderland's own Tearjerker here on Spark. You're listening to The Toolbox. I'm your favourite folk devil, Rolly Joe Carney. And unfortunately, no Hamish with me tonight. He's living up in Prague tomorrow, but he's getting his flight tonight. He's going to the airport. And I'm very, very jealous because Prague is one of my favourite cities in the whole world. It's beautiful. And also, for me, the beer is very, very cheap. Bit of a different toolbox tonight because it's just me. Thought I'd give all my regular, you know, filling guests, like filling hosts, a night off. So I'm talking to you a little bit about things like transitional periods and grief. And I'm in a transitional period myself at the moment. I've got a couple of life things happening. Well, one big life thing happening where it's very transitional. I'll have to get used to it, but you'll have to come back to the toolbox in 2 weeks' time to hear what that is. Yeah, and I'm also in the transitional stage of moving out of Sunderland and heading back to the motherland, back to Liverpool, and that's really exciting. I've got, you know, so much that I'm going to do when I get back, seeing friends I haven't seen for, it feels like forever, but I've only been here for 2 years. And it's strange, because it's not like I'm desperate to leave Sunderland. It's not like I'm in a position where I'm being like, I hate it here. There's nothing there. I've made some friends who I will have for life. Some mates who I'll call brothers until the end. Like, that's just facts. And sisters to the end, for that matter. You know, I've been incredibly blessed that the people of Sunderland and my friends here have been so open and honestly amazing. Because if you've listened to the show before, you'll know that there's a big age gap between me and Hamish. I am 33, Hamish is 23, so sometimes, you know, he's going out and he's, you know, living the life of the 20, like, his best 20s life, and I did that a decade ago, you know. I've been there, done that, got the t-shirt, and, you know, there's also that stage, like, I don't want to be the old man cramping this style, and a lot of people compliment me, be going, oh, well, if you hadn't told us you were 33, we'd have thought you were 27. I'm like, well, you have just made the Christmas card list. But, you know, it's the age-appropriate friends. And, you know, it's strange how you build these little communities and families around yourself and do all that. And, you know, some of the cereal bowl lads, like Benny Rabble, Ben Goodall, Chinny, who's been on the show multiple times. Actually, mentioning them, I've got, I also host Tuesday Home Time, and I've got the Diaz Brothers coming on to promote their newest single, The Great British Fake Toff, which is a fantastic single name. Also, like, their album is arguably the best album of the year, but, you know, and friends, like, I'll carry on, I'll go back to transitions. And I'm entering that part of my life now where I've come here, I've got the MA, I've done radio now for 2 and a bit years, and I'm ready for that next step. I've come away from Sunderland with the confidence to take on the industry and give it a good go. Not just a good go, but get to a place where I can actually go, I get paid to do this. Because, I mean, if you listen to, like, Monday Breakfast or Tube whenever, and you hear presenters like Caden or Seb or, you know, Granger Smith, Lewis Smith, yeah, like, we are all volunteers, but it's with the angle and the view of eventually getting employment in the industry, you know. Because, you know, as well, friends that have made it spark will celebrate my successes the same way that we celebrated successes with the likes of Daryl Jenkins Dixon. Absolute legend of a lady, Daryl. When she got, you know, when she covered the indie show on, was it Radio 1? Over Christmas, when Meg Percival did the takeover slot on Radio 1. Over Christmas, when Chrissy Cameron got the job of, you know, Radio 1 anthems. Same with Tyler Selby. Now, these are all people who I'm lucky enough to say, from being here in Sunderland, are my friends. And it's going to be weird not waking up and hearing the seagulls cawing over Roca Beach and having a walk over the Weymouth Bridge into town and going to Betsy Jenny for what must be the most affordable fry up in Sunderland. Having a walk through, having a laugh at all the naff fancy dress in Jackie White's market. The only criticism that you can make of Sunderland is that it isn't finished yet. You see everything that's going on here, and it honestly at times feels like how Liverpool felt in the run-up to the Capital of Culture in 2008. And what's different is all the investment for it's coming from here, the people here, as opposed to a big pot of European money. And I think that makes it somewhat special. You know, I'm not doing this as an elegy for my time in Sunderland, but I remember moving up and being so nervous because I was a decade older than everyone. It was 31 when I moved to Sunderland. The nearest person in age to me on the course was 22. 23. Yeah, Meg Percival was 23. And it's, luckily we could bond over things like music. I like rock music and punk and metal, and luckily so did Meg, so did Hamish. Jake Chappell as well. Shout out to our boy Jake, the Dewsbury Duke, the King of Poland. That's a story for another time. But it is like Sunderland is incredible. You've got 3 beaches. You've got Hendon, Roca and Seabourn. Your spitting's different away from Seam. You've got places like the Stack and the Sheepfolds. And believe me, like, they're important things in your nightlife and nighttime economy to kick on and be that vibrant city. You know, Sunderland is a music city. Joins a very, very select club of cities around the world with that status. That's remarkable. And a lot of hard work's gone in from the likes of Frankie Francis and, you know, you've got venues like Pop Rex and Independent. You've got pubs like the Ship Isis and the Museum Vaults, the Ivy House, Diego's. You know, could do with a nightclub or two, to be honest. Something a bit better than Gatsby's, but, you know, it is what it is. You can't have it all. No, it's just the rules. You can't. You know, and it's the same kind of nerves moving here that I had when I worked at camp. I worked for 6 summers at a camp called Stage Door Manor. It's one of the top ranking youth theatre programmes in the world, top three. And I'm not a theatre person. I just happen to work in the theatre and have a lot of like experience working with kids. So I went there and just thought, well, if I focus on like the kids stuff rather than the theatre stuff, then maybe I'll be all right. And I was just myself and it worked out fine. But you get there and everyone's like, what's your favourite show? And you're like, don't say Cats. Don't say Cats. Don't say Cats. And it was just like so warm and accepting and everyone just letting the freak flag fly. And, you know, I look back on these experiences that made me a better person. And I knew that my time at camp was coming to an end my last summer there, because not so much like I didn't have the energy for the job, but the type of person who was coming in, who was 21, 22 years old, the youngest counsellors, were just night and day different from counsellors we had before. They were a little bit more serious, a little more looking to sort of catch you out on stuff. And when you're, you know, a decade older, they're gonna, like, just facts of life. You know, some people unfortunately look to go, oh, he said this and that's something, he did that. It's like, it's called a joke, mate. And that's not me saying, you know, like, context is important, but I once got told off at camp because in my last year there, someone came over and was like, hello, my name is, that's for argument's sake, call her Amanda. Hi, my name's Amanda and I'm a Ravenclaw. I went, hi, I'm Rowley and I'm an adult. I got absolutely chewed up for that one. It's like, that's not nice. Like, no, it's not. But, you know, dealing with transition, it's, you know, keeping, for me, it was always about keeping touch with what I'd had before. You know, almost like, have you seen Die Hard? When people get off the plane and he's like, yeah, what you want to do is take off your shoes and like scrump up the carpet with your toes. Like, regular phone calls home, messaging people back home, and like, but also being present were important. It's the balance, especially when like it's the significant part of your life where you're moving or you're doing something, or when something's coming to an end. Maybe it's a retirement, maybe it's something else. But I'm just look back on this transition now and realize how incredibly blessed I've been to be in Sunderland when I've been in Sunderland. I can't wait to see things like the footbridge open. I can't wait to see the film studios open for this amazing, amazing city full of amazing, brilliantly warm people. Get the credit that it deserves. But I've just probably talked absolute nonsense, but I hope the sentiment came across, because I'd open the phone lines, but that's not working at the minute. That's why we're not having Bedtime Babylon on Thursday nights at the moment. But they are working on it. But anyway, I'll give you a break from me for a sec. This is Men's Needs by The Cribs. The 59th sound by The Gaslight Anthem here on Spark. Fun fact, that is your favourite folk devil, Rolly Joe Carney. Well, that's me. That's my favourite band of all time. If you ever want to sort of get my attention with conversation, just bring up Gaslight Anthem and I'll talk your ear off for hours. More so than I'm doing now. It's a song that Brian Fallon wrote when he was at a gig and he found out that his friend had died on the way to the gig. He'd been in a car accident. And that takes us neatly into a... Well, this is the toolbox, I'll say that first. This is the toolbox. Usually I've got a... Manky Scotsman with me, Hamish Smith, but he's gone on his jollies, so it's just me tonight. But that's obviously Brian Fallon wrote that as a way to process his grief that his friend had died on the way to his show. And I think grief comes in different forms, doesn't it? And it's still blunt and it's still raw sometimes, and I'll tie this into The Invisible Backpack at the start of the show. I've been particularly unlucky in the last 3 years where I've lost one person a year for the last 3 years. This year it was Kate, last year it was Keelan, and the year before it was my friend Abby. Now, I've already talked about Kate, so it's unfair to do that, so I'll sort of And the grief that I'm feeling now is, I hate to say bittersweet, but it is, because from my perspective and how this feels, yeah, I'm upset. Yeah, I'm, you know, again, angry that I've lost a friend. But with everything that she had going on and was wrong, in a way, I feel not happy, that's wrong. You'll know what I mean when I say it. She's not in pain anymore. She's not tormented anymore. And there's a little bit of comfort in that. That's it. I'm not happy. I'm comforted by that thought that, you know, she'll be on the other side, you know, waiting for us with a cup of tea and a couple of bickies, you know, when eventually, hopefully, in 90 years' time, it's my turn to shuffle off this mortal coil. Which was different from when my friend Keelan passed. Now, Keelan was, he was a good lad. He was. He died by suicide. Left behind a 33-year-old widow. And a lot of unanswered questions. You never know what's going on. Someone said, this is why we do the invisible backpack. Because it's just easy. How's your backpack? It's a bit heavy. And then that way, you know, take a bit more care on that person. But with Keelan, it was interesting, because I was up here, I was sat in the lecture when I found out my friend Charlie phoned me. Charlie never rings unless it's some heavy duty business, like. So I thought, oh, maybe where she's working's gone bust, or maybe, you know, something's happened with a flatmate, Matty, or something, like. And she just said, picked up the phone, like, hey, what's up? She said, Keelan's gone. I was like, God damn. Like, I was coming, that was the Monday, and I was coming back to the pool on the Friday, and I'd messaged them literally the Thursday or the Friday the week before to say, hey, I'm coming back to Liverpool, let's get out for a drink, let's meet up, let's have a laugh. And told that to Charlie, and she just goes, oh, God, Rowley, I didn't think you were that bad. And we just both started laughing, because, you know, it breaks the tension, and it's what you need. You know, you need those glimmers of light in the dark, don't you? And it's difficult. And I got through that by listening to a lot of The Smiths, which will inform the music choices coming up. But I mean, that was a very... I feel now the same as I felt then about Keelan's death. It was so unnecessary, and he found a permanent solution to a temporary problem. And it's not, and you know what, I don't blame anyone who does anything like that. You know, I haven't walked a mile in their shoes. Maybe it was insufferable. I don't know. You know, and I'm not going to call it selfish, and I'm not going to call it anything else, because that decision to do that had nothing to do with me. Nothing to do with me, and I know it's a heavy one this week, but I did warn that I would be talking about suicide on this show. You know, life for some people is a 5-star all-inclusive resort. Sometimes it's, for other people, it's less than a 1-star Fleabag motel. And sometimes it's something to be conscious of. You know, when I'm angry, I'm still angry, because, yeah, he's my friend. And he's another man gone. Like, that's the thing, like, you know, in the periphery of the edge of social groups and through family and stuff, I know so many men who've died by suicide that at this point it just feels like there's nothing you can do to change it. How much I do shows, like, I do a show like this with Hamish, that we do this show, that people are trying to be more conscious of things like mental health. It doesn't change the fact that a lot of us have been raised with toxic stoicism, where it's this ingrained into you as a bloke that you don't want to bother anyone. And that you get this sense from people that they'd rather see you die on the back of your white horse than have to bear the indignity of watching you fall off it. It's troubling. It really is, because I don't see it changing. And the main issue is, all right, yeah, like, getting men talking is one thing, but the expectation that men need to be these really, really available, open people overnight, on, like, you know, flick of a switch, isn't practical and not very fair. And when people say things like just talk, it's the laziest form of victim blaming you can ever do. Is it's like, well, if he just talked, then he'd still be here. It's not the case. Sometimes they just feel like they've been stonewalled because people don't have the acumen and they don't have the attributes to sit and listen. When someone comes to you and says, I'm having a hard time, I'm struggling, do not offer any solutions, do not offer any advice, because you're not in any position to give it. But what you can do is you can go, oh, that's awful that, mate. Crap that. Because that way they feel seen and they don't feel like they're being preached to. Well, maybe if you did this, like did some exercise and ate some kale. Maybe if you got healthy and stopped changing, it'd be great again and your mental health would come back overnight. Like, it's not how it works. It's not how that works. So yeah, that was last year's and the year before, my friend Abby. That one we saw coming because she had stomach cancer. And, you know, no one deserves that disease, the big C. But head of all people, she is hands down the sweetest person I've ever met. So gentle, so kind, so caring. When I worked at Stage Door Manor in my third year, I was a camp counsellor, so what I did was I taught video classes and I also looked after rooms, campers. I had the head male counsellor, it was called a group leader. I had a group leader called Scoggs, I don't mind naming him, because he fundamentally lacked any sense of integrity and he made life there initially for me very, very hard in my third year there, and it was difficult. And Abby gave me a kindness and a space in which I could feel and feel supported. You know, she was head of the props department, and she had, like, I'd go down there to be like, to have a cup of tea with her and just sort of cry on her shoulder. And she, if she heard someone coming, she'd be like, do you want to go and just hide in the props cupboard and that? And I was like, yeah, please. She offered me kindness at a time I needed kindness, when I needed empathy, when I needed support, when I wasn't getting it from anywhere else. And I'm getting emotional. I can't help but be emotional. She was a diamond. And I just hope in the way that I treat people that I can emulate a bit of that, because you know what? She was the best of us. Know what they say? The Lord only takes the best of us, but I get another time in my life when I listen to a lot of Morrissey. For people who say The Simpsons has gone like crap and woke, it's not. The episode where they were sent up a Morrissey is brilliant, and this is Everyone Is Horrid Except Me and Possibly You by Quillaby feat. Lisa Simpson. You're listening to The Toolbox. I'm your favourite folk devil, Rolly Joe Carney. And usually this is where I say I'm joined by Hamish Smith, but there's no Hamish with me tonight. Thanks for being on this train with me. I've been in a really weird mood since last night. I just thought this was the best place to process it, because no one's really around at the minute. It's the end of the show, unfortunately. Just because the conversation stops doesn't mean that the conversation stops. If you urgently need to speak to somebody, the number for Samaritans is 116 123. The number for Samaritans, once again, is 116 123. If you think peer-to-peer support might be more your speed, Sunderland has two Andy's Man Club groups here in Sunderland. There's one at the Beacon of Light and one at Kale Road Library. There's also a new group in Horton this spring. That's every Monday at 7 p.m. except for bank holidays. I've been a user of Andy's over the last 2 years, and honestly, like, it's no obligation to talk. It's just a cup of tea and a biscuit. And if you're not totally sick of me, I also do Tuesday Home Times, which I promise will be more upbeat than this last hour's been. And the podcast is out every Tuesday.
I'm a man, and it's okay to feel overwhelmed.
I'm a man, and it's okay to cry.
I'm a man, and it's okay to ask for help.
I'm a man, and I don't need to be perfect.
This has been The Toolbox.
Thanks for listening.
We'll see you next week at 10 p.m.